Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Chuck Fonzi. Welcome, Chuck. It's so great to have you with me.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we're going to start at the beginning. Are you a native Oregonian, or where did life begin for you?
Life began for me in a small town called Ripon, California, which is between Stockton and Modesto, or 90 miles about north of Fresno, or 70 miles east of San Francisco.
Where do you fit in the family?
I am the third son.
Of how many children?
Four. I have one sister that's younger and two brothers that are older.
As you were growing up, did you move around some, or did you pretty much stay right there where you were born?
Stayed in the same house. In fact, I was born three blocks away from the house I grew up in until I left Ripon. That's the house that until my parents died, that's the house they lived in. So we never moved.
What was your father doing or your parents doing that had you living there?
Well, what had us living there is it was a nice Dutch Calvinist community, and we were Christian Reformed, and Mom and Dad were Christian Reformed, and that's what kept us there. Now, Dad worked mostly in business management, first starting for his brother-in-law, my mom's brother, in the feed mill. Moving on up as that was sold to other positions, and then eventually working for the irrigation district in Central California. In Central California, irrigation is everything.
What was life like for you as a child growing up in, it sounds like maybe a relatively small community?
A small farming community. I would say I had the experiences of some people living on the farm. Well, it was interesting because we walked to our school in the morning. We also walked home for lunch. Believe it or not, the school kind of gets geared around farm life, and lunch was about an hour long. And we'd walk home, and Dad would come from the mill to the house, and we'd have our big dinner, like most farmers, at the lunch table.
And what might that consist of?
Oh, well, we're Dutch. Mashed potatoes, some kind of good meat, and then, of course, the veggies, of which I loved Brussels sprouts the best, still do, and whatever else Mom would cook up. On Saturdays, that was typically, though, beans and cornbread. That is, baked beans and cornbread. So that's a typical Dutch meal.
So you'd go back to school for the afternoon, and yep. About what time would school let out?
About 3:30. And we'd go home unless we had catechism with the church. It was a Christian school associated with the church. So if we had catechism, then we walked to catechism. It was probably about 3/4 mile from my house to school and about the same to the church, not much further. So, yeah, and it was California, so you walked all year long. You never got, even in the rain, I mean, it was unheard of to be brought to school if you lived in town.
So was this a private school?
Yes. Well, it was private. It was a Christian school, part of the CSI group of Christian schools. Christian School International had a very strong, well, it was the Christian Reformed Church supported it very strong.
So did your parents have to pay for you to go there?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. That was normal for those of us in that community.
Was there a public school that was an option?
Yes, about the same size, actually. But sending your kids to the public school when I grew up for my church background was unheard of.
So church was really, really important. And it's been all of your life. Tell me a bit about this church. What was it like? How might it differ from what we would know now at PMC?
Oh, my.
What was a worship service like?
Not unlike PMC, except there was typically the reading of catechism or the creeds. I grew up in a what's called, I guess I'd say, a confessional, it's a Calvinist confessional church, where the three confessions are to kind of define the belief system, and you have to agree that those three confessions are biblically based if you're part of that church. They are the Belgic Confession, the Heidelberg Catechism, and the Canons of Dort. And we were taught that every week in church by the pastor as part of just who we are. And we had two services every Sunday, because in one service they would always have to, by church declaration, denomination declaration, preach the catechism. Catechism was split into 52 Lord's Days. So, and in the other service, you could preach from, you know, series from the Bible. So we had catechism a lot. that was pretty critical.
Were those two like back to back, or how did they?
Oh, no, we would have a service in the morning, then a service in the evening. And okay, a typical Sunday would be you'd go to church all dressed up. You had to be very quiet if you were a child. Sunday school was optional, very seldom. I don't remember going to Sunday school. I remember going to catechism at that Sunday school. And if you were too squirmy, my dad would squeeze the knee. We had to be quiet. And during collection, we got a peppermint. That was a big deal for us kids. And then when you had communion, which was, I think, once a month, and us kids could get a peppermint during communion, that was a big deal, too.
Who gave you the peppermint, your mom or your dad?
Either. It was no, it wasn't.
And did your mom have other little toys and quiet things that you could play with as a child?
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. You were not allowed to do that. Notebooks, no things like that. No, no. We had to sit still and listen to the sermon. I got caught once by accident counting the panes of glass on the stained glass window, which was not unlike when we have PMC, and my arm was squeezed because I was being naughty. I wasn't listening to the sermon.
So that was the morning service, and then what happened for lunch that day or dinner?
Oh, okay, I should finish that. For my family, that wasn't a piece of the family. Then we would go after church to Grandpa, my mom's, Grandpa Dendolk's house for coffee, Grandpa and Grandma. So, and, you know, most of the members of that family went to the same church, so we would have a huge crowd for coffee and cookies, and all the cousins would gather at Grandpa's house, which is about five houses away from the church. And then go home and have lunch. And it was kind of interesting that I had forgotten about this. Because it was a Sabbath, there was an old tradition in my dad's family that no cooking would occur, or no major cooking would occur on Sabbath. So oftentimes, my dad would do the cooking, or would make this really wonderful tuna salad that we always loved, or do tuna on biscuits, which we love, but that was a set-aside, so mom didn't have to cook. And then later, then mom got to invite people over and do cooking, and that was at first frowned upon, I think, by my grandma. But anyway, and then we would have dinner, and then nap time, and then catechism study. Mom and dad would nap, we would nap, catechism study.
At the church?
No, at home, and I had to recite the catechism questions from memory to my dad before I could go out and play in the afternoon.
Do you remember any of those at all? Could you give us one or two?
Catechism? My only comfort in life and death is that I don't belong to myself, my Savior, my Lord in Christ, who, and then there's more to it. That's actually the first question and answer in the catechism. Otherwise, no, I don't remember.
In terms of play that day, were there certain things that you were not allowed to do?
Oh, yes. This is rather funny. We were not allowed to play baseball in the front yard. We were not allowed to go swimming. We were not allowed to ride our bikes. We were not allowed to do a lot of things on Sunday. But Dad always found a way to weasel stuff in, so we played catch in the backyard. Now, I could play with my trucks in the sandbox, and my sister could play with her dolls. And so after catechism, for maybe an hour, before you go back to church. So that was the way it was on Sunday.
The evening service was then the other?
Yeah, usually the evening service was the catechism service, but that was you know, there's several levels of catechism. Or he could preach from the catechism, from the Heidelberg Catechism, or the Belgic Confession, or the Canons of Dort in the evening.
It sounds fairly regimented.
Oh, yes. It was.
Did you chafe under this at some point as you got older, or was it just the way it was?
That's just the way it was. Never much gave it a thought. Well, I can give you a little bit as time goes on. But yeah, it was kind of the way it was. And then we would come home after church and have a snack, and that's often when Grandma Fonsi would come over, and then we'd have some goodies, like some sweets, and so, and it was off to bed we'd go, and then do the same the rest of the day. That was a typical Sunday church thing, and I want to say pieces of that. Yeah, growing up, it was just the way it was. Never even gave it a thought. Two important pieces for me, though, of that. Mom and Dad also loved the camp, loved the outdoors. So as we were growing older and older, we spent more and more time, even on the weekends, going camping up in Yosemite. And Yosemite was kind of our backyard, and we spent a lot of time. I spent a lot of time in the high country Yosemite before it was ever crowded. They had a very, very strong connection to the sense of spirit of creation, which was not normal for that church. It was kind of funny because I always was jealous of my classmates. They got to go to Disneyland down in L.A. Dad would, let's say, but we get to go to Yosemite. And he was right. He was definitely right. I did not go to Disneyland until my children were born. So I grew up with a very strong connection and love of the outdoors. Second piece was there was, because of the way it was, things were taught, there was a fear of hell.
And a fear of what?
Hell, going to hell. So one important point in my life as a 12-year-old was I could not sleep one night and woke up. I never went to sleep. I was crying like crazy because I couldn't go to sleep. I was afraid I was going to die and go to hell. I won't say that was from hell and damnation preaching. It was just the atmosphere. Because I don't think Reverend Tennis ever preached that way. And I became actually in high school and so quite involved in the young people's. I became an A student in catechism. So I really bought into it.
What was going to happen after you graduated from high school and how was that decision made?
Well, the desire always was to go to college. My oldest brother went to the military. My second brother went to Calvin College right out of high school. The desire was for me, but my grades weren't quite up. So I went to junior college, kind of on and off. And I found some jobs where I could make some money and bought a motorcycle and had some fun. It was really our decision, except one part of it. When I wanted to buy a motorcycle, Dad said, you may do so under this condition, no more assistance in college, and you start paying room for it. And I bought the motorcycle.
Where did you go on that motorcycle?
Oh, man, all over. Well, I started to work in the conference center in Santa Cruz, which right now is under danger of fire if it hasn't already been burned. It's called Mount Hermon. And I used to drive back and forth to there, which is funny because it's a very conservative Christian camp, and they didn't allow motorcycles. And I drove it and hid it in my uncle's cabin. And then we went into the mountains all the time. And then later on, I got a bigger one. And we traveled all over from Central California into Canada. I've traveled anywhere from Michigan and I guess west. I have traveled by motorcycle some parts of it. Not anymore.
You said we. Who is we?
Oh, my best friend, Ralph. He and I would do a lot of stuff together. I had a core of friends in school that we kind of did things differently. We'd go up into the mountains and go gold panning and stuff like that.
And where was this junior college? Was it right there close by or in your community? Or
yeah, Menasco Junior College. It was right there. Yep.
So what came next?
Well, I finally did get to Calvin and was...
And where is that?
Calvin College is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's kind of the center of Christian Reformed Church. It's where the seminary is. It's later on where I went to seminary. I did go to Calvin, and my grades were not too good. I was trying to study for engineering, and I was having a little bit of too much fun. And I was drafted.
Into the military?
Into the military.
And what year was this? So what was going on in the world?
Well, this was 1970. It was Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam vet. I did not go to Vietnam, but I'm a Vietnam era vet. Anyway, I was drafted. I had gone to Detroit for my physical and tried to do everything possible to get out. It didn't work. I was still drafted.
What did you try?
Tell them about asthma or this or that or any kind of ailment of that. And I had really strong desire to go to Canada and be a conscientious objector, and was told I might not be able to be welcome at home. That was not a position of our church. Conscientious objection was military service was expected. My brother did it. My uncles did it. My dad tried to get in during World War II and was rejected for something. So you are not expected to be a conscientious objector. So
where did that idea come from for you? Was it specifically, I don't want to go to Vietnam, or was it the whole military thing? Like, where did that whole idea come to someone to whom the family didn't accept it?
It was partly fear of Vietnam. I took care of that by joining the Air Force, and I never went there. I actually had a very good time in the military. I mean, really, I was totally blessed. I got into civil engineering. But I have to say then, because this happened about 2 years into the military, as a long story, I was associated with the campus ministry at Ohio State because I was stationed there. And I kept having this conscious thing coming back up. And after I was shipped to Germany, I was actually pursuing conscientious objection inside the military, which you're allowed to do. And because of my job, I did not have to carry a gun. In fact, I was ordered never to carry an M16 because I was a surveyor. I had this fear. This is what's interesting, because today my passive was very different. But I had the fear that if I took another person's life, I was taking this last opportunity to commit his life to Jesus and be saved from hell. So I saw myself as committing someone to hell if I took their life, and I couldn't do that. That started already in college, but it's a mixture. I wouldn't say today that I'm very proud of that, because my spiritual beliefs are so far from that, but that was the motivating factor for being the conscientious objector. And there's stories there we don't have time to go into, but they wanted to keep me longer, so they were going to pay me a big bonus, and I had one officer who was in charge of my office, Major Mackey, when I talked to him about it, he said, "Chuck, you're just too good to be here. Don't re-up." Because I told him about my conscious objection, and he supported it. He was a really wonderful guy. So I got out with an honorable discharge a little early so I could go back to Calvin College, where my grades went up. Yes.
Did all of these experiences help you to kind of focus in even more on what you might want to do as a profession or how you were going to make a living?
Yeah, and that didn't always pan out. It didn't pan out the way I thought it would. Yes, it did. I went back to Calvin, never wanting to be an engineer because I had worked in it. That was a mistake, very frankly, because I won't go into that. I got a degree in philosophy with kind of in the back of my head, well, what are you going to do with that? Well, one of them is to go into that ministry. But, yeah, I married someone who said I won't be married to a minister. So.
And that's another whole story we'll have to get another time.
Yes. So I graduated from Calvin with a degree in philosophy, but it's training in high level logic. And I got it back into my engineering field in a different way in New Jersey. A bit of a story there. But anyway, then in 1988, my dear wife said, "You know, I'm not seeing you really happy. Do you really want to consider going into the ministry?" So I went through a period of a year of discernment and then went back to Calvin Seminary. And I graduated from there and became an ordained pastor in the First Reformed Church, still carrying the banner of our three confessions, but I became a chaplain.
And where? That's
started in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in North Memorial Hospital, and spent a lot of time, really, really, they called me Adrenaline Chuck. We spent a lot of time in the emergency room and in hospice. That was during my residency as clinical professional education, CPE. There were no jobs there, and I had an offer in Arizona, the last place we lived before here, as a chaplain in a drug and alcohol rehab center. So I worked there until that position was ended, because the institution was bought out by another Christian institution that didn't like chaplains.
So how long were you actually in Arizona?
We were there for 20 years. I was a chaplain for about 3.5-4 years of that. Then I went from chaplaincy, because that job ended. I was a pastor of outreach at a church, and that was the place where things started to fall apart. My theology started to fall apart. I couldn't justify things. And long story, I left my ordination behind, left the church, and the Spirit found me in cohorts with an Anabaptist community called Trinity Mennonite, which you know very well. You spent time there.
I did.
In Glendale, Arizona.
We weren't there at the same time, just to clarify, but we both have some history at Trinity Mennonite in Phoenix.
I was baptized there. I was Anabaptized. So
how did you end up in Portland, Oregon, and at PMC?
Children moved here to go to grad school, and my daughter became a pharmacist, and she started working as a clinical pharmacist at Good Sam, and now she's a pharmacy manager. And those are the children who are having grandchildren, which they have had. And we have now 2 grandchildren up here, so we came up here to be close to grandchildren. And that really is the primary reason. PMC was a natural because I had heard about it, the Trinity, and I was looking for an Anabaptist Mennonite community that had the values that PMC has.
Tell me just a little bit about this becoming an Anabaptist. We have a bit more time. Just give me a couple minutes explanation.
Sure. You've heard already about the steeped in knowledge perspective of the catechisms and the confessions. It's fairly black and white when you're in that world. And when you're in your chaplaincy world, things aren't black and white anymore. They start to fall apart. And the now deceased Pastor Howe from Trinity said it best for me. I think I've talked before about his recording on the conference, but he said, what if Jesus actually meant what he said? That gets to my gut. That's where it's no longer beliefs. It's no longer head stuff. It's like, what if his life really was what it's supposed to be about? So the move to Anabaptist to me has been a move to following Jesus and not believing the right things about him or the rest of his life. In some ways, and I am having an increasing experience with Buddhism that I appreciate, but I have to keep coming back. It keeps coming back to saying, you know, I'm hearing Jesus differently, and it's really hitting my heart. It's, by all world standards, empire standards, Jesus was, in my mind, insane. And that's why I believe he should be followed. Because the world has never presented solutions that have permanent effect. And it just seems to be, every time we listen to him, he does. And it's a change and transformation. The point for me has been, and it's been a long process, of internal transformation to hearing and feeling and sensing the Spirit in a way that has more reality that I can't put into words. And all of the head stuff seems to have been a support of the ego.
Did you hear anything at all about Anabaptism in some of your, say, seminary courses? Were there some courses where you looked at other denominations or religions? Or was this a completely out of the blue suddenly you found?
My finding of it was out of the blue. I was kind of going insane. So I wrote somebody that I had met at a pastor's conference who's kind of famous, Brian McLaren. I said, can you just help me? I don't know, because he was in that place. He never wrote me back. He wrote the pastor of Trinity back and Shane Hibbs contacted me, and that's when the dialogue started. But I should tell you, it started early, okay? During Calvin, I went to the Middle East for an archaeological dig. I went to Jordan. And after the dig, I spent 10 days with MCC folks on an irrigation project with the Bedouins in Jordan. And for a year after that experience, I had the MCC contact me, I think two or three times, to try to recruit me back there. And I'll tell you what, I wanted to go back, but I wanted to finish college. I had to finish. This was my second try at college. I had to finish it. So that stopped me. But I found something there, too. The willingness to walk the walk instead of just talk the talk. The Mennonite Central Committee just really hit me deep inside. So, yes, it was previous. My way of looking at it is the Spirit kind of had these intersections, and finally it happened at Trinity. So Anabaptism, in its modern form, is in my gut.
Well, I'm sure there are many more stories that we could hear, but are there any sort of final words that you would like to say at this moment as we're finishing up?
I mean, other than salvation that I am finding through my experiences of today, and I think that were opened up by my baptism into Anabaptism, are no longer about heaven and hell, but about transformation here, right now. And it's both painful and rewarding and deep and peace-giving. And I am incredibly grateful for having, I did not want to move to Oregon at all. I loved it down in Arizona. I'm a mountain biker, so I haven't been able to do much. And there is mountain biking here, that's another story. But having the camaraderie, community at PMC, and now by a bigger community through Illumin, but like my small group at PMC we started 3 years ago, it just is vibrant. It's not going to die. Oh, wow. It is a blessing for which I have no words. So I want to say thank you.
Chuck, thank you so much for taking the time to share many of your deep feelings and stories with us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. We hope you discovered something new and feel more connected to your friends at Portland Mennonite. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.